Hello, everybody. This is Turtle, back after a long hiatus, and I'm here with my good friend Pencils.
Hello, everyone,
and welcome to a new episode of the Ruby Discourse.
Beautiful. After a pretty long hiatus.
Yeah, I've been busy. I've been busy. Everyone's busy. It's been a crazy couple of years. But Pencils, so you're the publisher for the show, aren't you?
You could call me that. I have been into publishing, I guess, since January of 2020 when I started the wiki with Timotei's help.
Okay. How has that experience been for you?
Empowering, yet. I don't have to do a lot. I was just kind of renewing the certificate now and then. I kind of want to take a hands-off approach because it is a wiki, and I feel like trying to really guide the direction of the wiki might make it worse than just letting people organize organically. There have been a few exceptions to that. One of the things was Jay Brereton made a pretty good pretenders page that got kind of chipped away into something very watered down and unfocused. But for the most part, everything kind of just gradually improves over time.
Well, I mean, we don't really have a lot of time to go into Jay Brereton's many failures. But we'll have, you're the publisher of the Ruby Discourse now, and has the fame, like, you know, been difficult for you?
The fame has been a little challenging. I will be at the mall and say, "Hey, isn't that Pencils, the publisher of the Ruby Discourse?" And I kind of have to.
It's like a Beatles situation. Like the mob might tear you limb from limb, just out of love.
I'm forced to put on sunglasses, get on a skateboard, and clink a couple beer glasses together to make a distraction.
Yeah, you know, it's the oldest trick in the book for a reason.
You're right, and all these things are easily acquired at a mall.
It's a classic because it works.
So that's why I feel safe there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, it makes sense. I also like there's just like a mall, like a random mall.
what can I say?
Yeah, maybe a mall in Sweden, I guess. I don't know. So the real reason I want to talk about is, and you know, we just got this a while ago, you know, but you're a martial artist. So I'm a martial artist. People talk about that. You're also a martial artist.
I am a martial artist.
So tell us a little about that. You know, what's your style and so on and so forth?
So there's Tai Chi, right? And there's like a range of how serious people take Tai Chi. A lot of people, there's a lot of woo in it. Mysticism, like superficial mysticism, I guess. I had an instructor about 10 years ago now at the university who took it very seriously. He would, I don't know if he's still been doing this because of COVID. I don't know if he's still around because he had cancer 10 years ago. And I checked a couple years ago and he was still teaching. Anyway, he would take a trip to Hong Kong.
You might consider reaching out, like sending an email or something, you know, reconnecting.
Yeah, I should.
If you need a push, let this be your push, because you know, it's good to reconnect with your old teachers, in my opinion, you know, and something about life, I think, and the minions too, is that everybody always thinks they have more time than they do.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you always think like, oh, you know, like. A couple of years, maybe, you know, I'll write, you know, I'll get to that, and, you know, and you never do, and you know what I mean, like, you know, but I'm sorry, what you were saying, you had an instructor, and he was a serious person.
Oh, yeah, he took his practice very seriously, so it's Yang family style, Tai Chi Chuan, and I don't know what to say about it.
The impetus behind this episode was, you were discussing your style, and then you brought up someone else's style, and you're like, it's an inferior style, you know. And that was very interesting to me, because so I'm a martial artist, you know, I practice a Brazilian martial art called capoeira, you know. And capoeira has very distinct styles, you know. Has very distinct styles, you know. The groupings can be kind of loose and weird. I don't know if this is the case with your martial art. I'd be interested to hear about it, you know. I was going to say, you know, in capoeira, your style is really genealogical.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like, you know, like it's really like, who taught you? Okay. Who taught him? Okay. Who taught him? Until like, you know, until the guy you're talking to can be like, oh, I know who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know, so your line goes up to Mr. Bimba or to this guy, you know what I mean, so on and so forth.
Right, yeah. So like, there's like Yang Chen Fu came up with Yang family style, and then he taught it to his bodyguard because Yang was a pretty big fella, and it was hard for him if somebody were to attack him to not kill them accidentally.
That's really funny.
So he had a bodyguard a bit shorter than him, and you know, he could fend people off without hurting them.
Right, and you get a bodyguard because you're too lethal. Right. That's really funny. That's very, very funny. Yeah.
So I think that bodyguard's name is Dong Ying Che, and he taught the guy that my instructor learned from.
Okay.
So
that's your line. So it goes to the founder of the style, his bodyguard. He taught a guy, he taught your instructor, he taught you.
Right.
Okay. Well, interesting. So that must
be pretty close in a lot of ways. Anyway, keep going.
No, you were saying continue.
Oh yeah. Well, so anyway, yeah, like I could go on about like,
please do. That's what we're here. That's what we're here for.
Innovations, not exactly innovations, but like flourishes, I guess, that the bodyguard guy came up with, like practicing the form, but keeping the footwork within the space of a telephone booth.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because footwork is, you know, probably with any martial art, footwork is extremely important.
Sure.
Yeah, it's just one of those like big like first principles that's kind of universal.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, no, it's true. It's complicated. You know, again, you know, capoeira is not, it's difficult to talk universally about capoeira styles.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, because there are people, you know, who play very comfortably, like in as you described, the space of a telephone booth, mm-hmm. Practitioners of what some people might describe as jogo de dentro, which is the inside game.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then there are people who like a lot of space, right. You know, and they, and they practice a lot of the jogo de fora, which is the outside game, you mm-hmm. know. Dentro y fora, in this case, refer to So as you're aware, you know, like every strike, especially if you're a striker, every strike has a maximum effective range,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, and a minimum effective range,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay, so if you're a yoga jifora person, you know, or you favor yoga jifora, you spend a lot of your time outside of the maximum range. Does that make sense?
Right.
But if you're yoga jidentro, you spend time inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you tuck in. Yeah.
Well, no. You're stepping into his space so close that he can't punch you.
Yeah.
You know, you're hanging out there. You know, and for this reason, you know, jogo de dentro practitioners favor strikes like kabisa, like the headbutt. You know, like elbows. You know, things. Things that, like, you know, are effective inside the range where a kick or a punch doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, hashteira, which is to sweep the leg. Tell me about the elements of the style that you've learned and that you practice, you know, and sometimes that can be hard, you know, but like, you know, what can you describe your style?
I guess the most fundamental part of Tai Chi is pushing.
Okay.
My instructor has a very like STEM background.
He's a scientist.
Sort of like a computer scientist.
Okay.
So we would talk about like C programming sometimes. He used to teach it to like prison inmates, I guess, as well.
Okay.
Community service or something. Let's see. He said like what's really good practice for practicing the pushes we learn in Tai Chi is using a shopping cart. It's all about, yeah, like having a grounded footing and having subtle adjustments in what you're doing with your hands once you've made contact with another person. That's a big part of it.
When you say it's all about pushing, I'm sensing that when you say that, you're talking about around something deep and large. So try to tell me what that means.
Well, I mean, it's deep and large, but it's also mundane. Like I said, they said the ideal practice for it, you know, like somebody might use like a bag for boxing, is just pushing a shopping cart.
But you're pushing it, and you're not just pushing it in the normal way of a shopping cart. You're pushing it different ways.
Yeah, you can be pushing it in the normal way, but you can think a lot about what angle your elbow is at. Like if you let your forearm get like too close to your body, it's really difficult to get it if there's somebody opposing it to like get it past that angle where you have a good mechanical advantage against.
It's leverage.
Yeah, it's like just saying like don't let your arm get within a tighter angle than like 45 degrees or so. And if you do, turn a little bit. Because like that was one of the things that my instructor kept chanting, I guess. It was his big mantra, was change the vector.
No.
Yeah?
No, I hear you. I'm listening.
Yeah. So
yeah.
The vector, that's...
change the vector. Interesting.
So for math, for people who aren't as into math, a vector is a magnitude and a direction. So you can either change the amount of strength that you're opposing with or the direction of that. And that will be something very difficult for your opponent in some cases to anticipate. That's a big part of pushing strategy, I guess. Another big concept within that is sticking. So like you can just grab somebody, but like you can also kind of put your hand on somebody's arm in a way that you're not grasping with any muscles, but just the friction of your palm is keeping. So that's something you can also practice with a shopping cart, is what ways can you contact the handle of the shopping cart and still push it?
That's interesting. You know, that does enter into, especially Jogo Jidantro. So full disclosure, you know, I'm sort of a big guy. You have now seen me over camera, our listeners have not, you know, but I'm like 5'11", I'm like 250 pounds, whatever and stuff. And the capoeira style that I've come to favor involves a lot of Jogo Jidantro, the inside game. Anyways, I bring that, I whatever, because, what's it called? Because what you just described enters into Jogo Jidantro. So a lot of Jogo Jidantro, is about, smothering, your opponent's opportunities in the cradle. Does that make sense? You know, when you step close to someone, if they're untrained, their first impulse is to sort of lash out violently, you know. And so the first thing you do is you very gently take your hands if you have good manners, it is in most styles good manners to use the back of your hands for this purpose. Like you don't touch them with your palm, but with the back of your hands. Traditionally, this is because if you're playing capoeira outdoors, your hands will make contact with the ground when a lot.
Oh yeah.
And they'll become dirty.
Right.
And so you touch your opponent with the back. You touch the person you're playing with the back of your hands. To avoid dirtying their clothes. It's a politeness thing. Some people don't care about it at all. Some styles of capoeira are very, very. If you dirty someone's clothes in a deliberate way, they will take it very personally.
That makes sense. And that's when the knife comes out.
Oh yeah, yes, absolutely. Like when I say, I mean very, very personally. As a matter of fact, there are still people. This is a very archaic way to play capoeira, but a master will show up to a hada in a white linen suit. Mm-hmm. This is very old school, And uh-huh. The idea is a white linen suit is the easiest thing to get dirty in the world. And so the whatever is, he will step into the hada, he will play everybody, and then he will step out, and his suit will be spotless. And this is a very high mark of skill. Hmm. In Jogo Ginevra, a very basic and important thing, is you use your hands gently. Like, so for example, if you're stepping up behind somebody, right, like you're coming up behind somebody, you want to cover two, I guess, vectors, as you might put mm-hmm. it, you want to cover the back of somebody's elbow, mm-hmm. and you want to cover their head, right? Because those are the two things. Those are the two things they can use to hit you, right? When you're approaching, does that make sense?
Yeah, I've definitely connected my elbow with a sternum that was behind me once.
Exactly. And so you gently cover the elbow and you gently cover the head. And if the elbow tries to lash at you, you simply gently push back. You're already there.
Yeah.
This also goes, when you're in Jogo Ginevra, if you're near somebody's feet or legs, you place the back of your hands, one behind his heel and one, in the crook of his knee. This is if you're behind him, right? Behind his heel prevents the foot from lashing up at you. And the crook of his knee, let me get out of the record. I don't know if that's me or not. Whatever. What's it called? It wasn't me. There you go. Sorry. The crook of his knee, if he tries to, in Capoeira we call it shapa. Other martial arts call it a side kick or mm-hmm. A kick where his leg has to curl up and has to extend, mm-hmm. Straight at you, and he's going to hit you with the bottom of his heel or his whole foot. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Anyways, so if he tries to do that, your hand in the crook of his knee just pushes gently, and and preventing his leg from extending.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So Jogo Ginevra is about occupying space. You're occupying space, and you are denying him opportunities.
That's a principle in Tai Chi that we practiced as well, is you can put for most any joint, but a lot of times this ended up being the shoulder. Just mm-hmm. if you can just place your hand there and just put a little pressure strategically, it's all timing, basically, you can really prevent people from doing all kinds of things that they would have been doing with their arms otherwise.
that makes perfect sense. It doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot. What it requires is for you to be there first.
Yeah.
And paying attention. Yeah.
Yeah, my instructor, he used this phrase, cutting the root.
Yes.
Yeah.
I
want to balance, because unless they're grounded, they can't really hit well.
Well, it's fun. Yeah. I call it smothering something in the cradle.
Okay.
which is perhaps a darker, a darker image. You prevented, when your hand is on the back of his head, he is not going to headbutt you. He can't, if you know what you're doing, you know, like, you know, like, you know, like, you, you know, and that, and that's a very dangerous thing from that angle, for what's worth, you know, like, because that headbutt, when the head swings back like that will break, that will break your face, man.
I think you said that something like that year, last year, something like, basically anybody can headbutt well, because you're holding your head up all day.
Yes. So yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to train. Yeah. So, you know, so this is funny. Like I am sort of a muscle guy. Although that didn't happen intentionally. A lot of very traditional capoeiristas are not muscle guys, you know, because the very, very old school capoeira techniques and movements, in particular, cabeçada, headbutt, habas de raia, which is a sort of, I guess it's a spinning heel kick, the trademark move of all capoeira styles.
That's the one where like the head and foot kind of
switch places. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And rasteira, which is the sweep. They don't require a lot of muscle or you don't have to be a weightlifter to perform them effectively.
Momentum based, or
I don't really know how to describe it. I'm not like a very educated person, like, kinesthetically.
Would you say it's a flexibility thing, a tendon thing?
It's just about timing and placement. Okay. So hashtera works, for example. Capoeira is very hard to teach for this reason. Hashtera, for it to really work, requires that your opponent be genuinely surprised. Does that make sense?
Right.
You can train like hashtera in different ways. You can improve like, you know, your ability of your foot to like drag weights, which I've done. So on and so forth, whatever, you know, but the reality is like, you know, hashtera relies on when someone's really trying to hit you, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but like you go to punch somebody or something, and you think you're going to hit them,
right?
But you don't hit them, you miss, and you kind of hurt your elbow a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, you know, because your body was expecting, your body was expecting to like to push. Yeah, exactly, and it did. It's similar to, it's the same thing as in some ways. You know, like you're going up some stairs, and you like there's one fewer stair than you thought.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, or something. You know, you miscount the stairs, and you have that moment of like, whoa, you know, that moment. You know,
strained, very off balance. Yeah.
Yeah, so that moment of genuine surprise, which you really can't fake, right. But
that's the moment that you sweep them.
What your sweep must create that moment in them.
Oh, okay.
You know, because yeah, and if it does, they'll fall. It doesn't matter who they are. You know, that moment when you punch, or especially when you kick. And you like, you know, and you think you're going to make contact with him, your whole body is leaning in, you know, all sorts of subconscious little muscles and balance things are geared toward trying to hit this guy, and then trying to like, you know, like anticipating like, you know, the recoil from that or whatever, so on and so forth, you know. And that's the moment that you're vulnerable to the hashtera. Hmm. Does that make sense?
I need to take a quick break to feed
my pets. Oh, shoot. To think about that?
No, to feed my pets. My pets.
Oh, to feed your pets. Oh, of course. All right. All right. We'll pause.
If you can pause if you want. You can leave it recording and just cut it. Like, I don't know how it works.
I'm gonna pause it. Okay. All right. Pencils will feed his pets, and we'll take a quick break. Okay, Pencils fed his pets. We're back. Where were we?
We were talking. I think you're talking about martial arts concepts.
Well, yeah, you know, we're talking about style. I'm talking about style, you know, and you know, I want to approach and talk about. So, but yeah, the impetus for this episode was you talked about a style, and then you brought up, as I mentioned, someone's style. You're like, that style is inferior, and I'm like, that's interesting.
Yeah. The founder of my family of Tai Chi is really pragmatic, and there's a style called Wu family style that my instructor would say was just, you know, it had some good things to it, but it wasn't very practical. It was like this, you probably heard of like Qigong.
Yes, I have. I actually learned a very, I had a brief interaction with it. I remember the primary thing I remember was they described how important it was to keep your facial muscles in a certain position.
Interesting.
In particular, like
tongue on the roof of the mouth, kind of stuff.
No, well, that's funny. Yeah, you know, the I mean, might be, and you seem to know about it, and I want to hear about it, but they were like it's crucial that you keep your brow unfurrowed between your eyebrows, where your nose meets your forehead.
Huh.
Like for like chi flow purposes or whatever. You know, they were very, very serious about this.
Interesting.
In the interaction that I had, this was the thing that was most emphasized. But you were saying so Qigong and the other style.
Also, yeah, Qigong it's mostly for exercise, right? It's not really a martial art so much. It's like a health kind of thing, and the feet stay planted the entire time. And I think certain styles of Tai Chi are kind of geared more towards that.
Yeah, I've heard of this
martial aspect.
I've heard of this. Someone described it as hospital Tai Chi.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is my style as well. Also, you get all these health benefits, and it's part of a larger family called internal martial arts. I'm not sure if you're. If you've studied much about Chinese martial arts,
I have not, and perhaps our listeners haven't. So it might be worth it.
So have you seen Jet Li, right?
Okay.
Have you seen The One?
Is that the one where all his there's multiple universes?
Right, he's like fighting himself.
Yeah.
So that's that movie demonstrates.
I haven't seen it. No.
Well, for anyone listening, because you don't really have to have seen it, just letting you know it's a reference for internal martial arts. So these two internal martial arts that are not Tai Chi, one of them is called Bagua Zhang. The Bagua is the trigram diagram, the eight trigrams, you know what I'm talking about?
No, but it's all right, go on.
Well, anyway, and Zhang means fist. It's almost capoeira-like in that it involves you kind of walk in a circle and you like face the center of the circle the whole time. And the movements are all very circular, like helical up and down. It's a very strange martial art, but it's very efficient in a lot of ways. I think maybe because like a lot of that angular motion prevents a lot of the situations like you were talking about that can get people overextended if they miss a blow, because even if it's missed, it's being returned back to where it was because of all the angular motions.
sure.
And then the name of the other one's more complicated, and I can't remember it as well. And it's not quite as popular, but it also looks cool.
Good
movie for that. Aikido, which is not a Chinese martial art, it's Japanese martial art. But it's also considered an internal martial art.
And so what's an internal martial art?
It's mostly about, so you have external martial arts and internal martial arts. 100 or so years ago, martial artists in China, like, okay, let's start organizing these. So they're like, do you have more of like a Shaolin style? Is it more like Kung Fu? Is it more about like training super hard, hitting super hard, things like that? Or is it what they call like the Wu-Tang style after the Wudong monastery? It's like a Taoist kind of place. Or they practice these internal martial arts, which have more of an emphasis on very precise movements and weight shifts. So that kind of goes back to what I said, like pushing is kind of like the most fundamental part of Tai Chi because it's about shifting your weight.
Okay, so what were you describing as external to internal? I understand on a spectrum of coarse grain to fine grain.
You know, that's a good way to put it.
You know, yeah, like so capoeira is really like it's hard to talk about capoeira because capoeira is less one thing than it is a bunch of different things that are all in conversation with each other, you know, and have been for a long time. I mean, not like thousands of years or whatever, but you know, but a couple hundred years, you know, yeah, you know, like you'll meet capoeiristas from different styles, and I haven't talked too much about capoeira styles. Maybe we will in a second. I don't know, you know, but suffice to say, like you know, like there are people who you know the capoeira universe includes brawlers and duelists. You know, and everything in between. You know, people who are incredibly coarse. You know, like people in the fucking UFC. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's hard to get coarser and with apologies to our friends, especially Somber. You know, who's an aficionado. You know, like it's hard to get coarser and stupider. You know, and like more like, you know, like barbaric, you know, in a very ignoramus way than the UFC, you know. You could construct something dumber, but it would be hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like boxing, like which UFC has a relationship to.
Formal in a way. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You know, boxers are you know like you know especially so within as I understand it within boxing like the word boxing means you know the art of boxing, you know right. The you know the understanding of the form and the you know and the and so on and so forth, you know, as opposed to like punching.
Right.
You know, like you know you can be. You know, you can be a skilled boxer, you know, you could be a successful boxer, like, just by punching really hard. Like that's possible, I said this before, you know, but I've heard like, you know, from boxing people, you know, like the way to defeat a puncher is to box him. You know, which is to say, like you know, like you know, you're up against the guy who's just like you know, well, he's one punch man, you know, and the way to defeat him is to you know to understand boxing, you know, of course, conversely, you know, the way to defeat a boxer, which is to say, a person who is like a very skilled technical fighter, you know, is to hurt him. You know, like, yeah, you know, like, you know, like, you know, and so
that's a weird trick for winning fights.
Yeah, well, you know, but, you know, I mean, it was Mike Tyson, you know, who said everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
That's true.
You know, and yeah, no, absolutely true. No, but, you know, but yeah, no, you know, so capoeira, you know, contains like, you know, contains multitudes, you know, it contains these enormous, there, anyways, you know, but yes, I'm sorry. So external, internal, coarse grain to fine grain. You were saying,
Mike Tyson is 5'10".
He's only an inch shorter than me. Like you know, and he'd absolutely lay me the fuck out. You know, that's a serious man.
Yeah, it makes the end of Punch Out really funny because it's like, how tall is this guy? you played the NES Punch Out. Where Mike Tyson is like
I vaguely know to what you are referring.
Yeah, sorry.
It's all right. Our listeners would love it. They're going nuts right now.
I'm sure. And you know, I haven't even heard the Beard episode. I'll try to. It's probably great.
He's fine. I think that it wasn't my best.
Oh.
Yeah. It's sort of a concept episode like this one, but it just doesn't really come together. You know, I think he probably wanted to talk about something else. That's okay. You know, but what's it called? Yeah. So, a beautiful butterfly just flew outside my window. That's a little radio magic that you're experiencing now. But what's it called? Tell me about the style that you were describing that's inferior.
Well, it covers fewer like sets of motion, I guess is an easy way to put it.
Okay.
It doesn't stay as well grounded. It's not as practical. I just had the air conditioner turn on. I don't know.
It's fine. I can't hear it. I don't care.
Okay, great. Just making sure.
Yeah. I don't give a shit about the listener's experience. It's not important to me.
My instructor told us this story once about how he sat in on a Tai Chi class somebody else was teaching, and he watched everyone go through the form before he tried it with them. He noticed at a certain point, the instructor of that class would do the push in the form. Sorry. And then he would stay extended. Like he would kind of have his back hunched over, and he would keep doing the rest of the form with his shoulders hunched forward, and so would all of his students. And my instructor, after observing that and doing it with them all, he did it, but he went back to where his shoulders should have been after the push. And like the guy who was instructing that class got really excited and like went over to him and like, you know, like patted him on the shoulder a bunch and said, this guy finally got it. None of you are getting this. But it's that sort of thing, because people like to cling to tradition, even if they don't understand it. But if you understand the principles of what's going on, you can figure out how to correct errors that have accumulated. And some styles have definitely put tradition before anything practical.
That's you know what, that's a very interesting thing to say. It's funny because, you know, so capoeira does not really have first principles. Like that's something about it. Like in the history of capoeira, you know, there are two people in particular, Mestre Bimba and Mestre Pastinha, you know, who are acknowledged as having founded schools and styles. You know, but the school and style, like way of doing capoeira, you know, where you have an academy, so on and so forth, is actually it really is imported, I believe, from the Chinese tradition.
I believe that.
You know, or from the Asian martial art, you know, you know things like judo and jiu-jitsu, you know, ended up in Brazil. You know, it's where you get Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, that's a lot of Japanese Brazilian people.
Exactly, you know, and
Portugal and everything. Yeah,
you know, things that are in are very prevalent features of modern capoeira. For example, the cordão, which is the cord, which is to say, like, you know, like a belt system.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of styles have adapted,
right? Like straight from Japan. Yeah.
That's from the fucking 70s. I had a teacher, who I've slightly obscure his name, you know, I refer to him as Master Songbird.
Okay.
You know, and that was a whole saga a few years back on the Scored. If you're,
I feel like scrolling up.
You better search for this one. This is back in like 2019, 2020. Master Songbird, so Master Songbird is a traditionalist.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I believe his wife described him once in a promotional material as a capoeira preservationist.
Right. Okay.
You know, which is to say, like, you know, like he adheres religiously to a style which is now completely archaic. Mm-hmm. You know, completely archaic. He's in many ways a very, very practical capoeirista, you know, or martial artist, because he can have, I was not there for this, but he did like so his whole thing is he's constantly ranting about the inferiority of other people's styles. Uh-huh. You know, and how they don't practice true capoeira, a capoeira de verdade, he would say, you know, the true capoeira, he describes other people's capoeira errado, which is to say erroneous capoeira, capoeira that is an error.
Okay.
You know, and he's a crank, honestly. He's a crank. The man's a fucking crank, you know. But for example, you know, he absolutely rejects the idea of the cordal, you know, the belt okay. system. He's like it's a total invention. You know,
but
like,
so is capoeira.
Well, it's complicated. You know, so capoeira, you know, like, you know, has a sort of organic quality in that, like, you know, no one designed capoeira. Capoeira just kind of happened. We don't even really
vernacular martial art.
What'd you say?
It's a vernacular martial art.
Go on about that.
Just that it people who needed to use the techniques developed and experimented with the techniques until it became a system instead of somebody formally designing one.
Yes, thank you. You've given me a new term, a vernacular martial art. And what's related is, like, you know, like for example, a bunch of different capoeiras, like in the plural, like a bunch of things that were all called capoeira, sort of like arise in different places in Brazil, like at the same time. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you have Bahian capoeira from the state of Bahia. You know, you have Sao Paulo, which had like a distinct variant of capoeira. Rio de Janeiro had a very distinct variant of capoeira. Which is either totally extinct or almost totally extinct, you know. We have a bunch of like drawings, from the period. This was sort of before photography, you know, like in like the early 1900s, like, you know, like 1910, 1920. You know what I mean? Like, you know that. You know, and mm-hmm. you know, and like, you know, for example, like, you know, like a big part of Rio de Janeiro capoeira was fighting with weapons, in particular, the walking cane.
Right.
You know, which was a common, you know, like, you know, like you have these guys who look like fucking like, you know, like dandies or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, they're very well dressed. You know, whatever, and they're fucking brawl, you know, and they're brawling, but it's capoeira,
right? Yeah, I think they had that in like some of the early Olympics. They had like cane fighting.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's an entire thing. You know, I saw a very short documentary made by a group of capoeiristas that I haven't been able to find, but it was about stick fighting, like traditions of fighting with sticks,
like a streetman, stuff like that.
But specifically around in the countryside around Rio de Janeiro.
Oh.
Right, you know, they found like a whole, you know, like, you know, like it was literally like a rural thing, you know, and they found like three different, you know, like these people are all old as shit, you know, and like you know, and the material circumstances, you know, that created the communities where people would the agricultural communities where, like, you know, you'd want to, you need to be able to defend yourself picking up a stick, you know, like, you know, like that, the, you know, those no longer exist, you know, but they found a couple people who were like, you know, masters of this thing, you know, they call it jogo com pau, you know, playing with sticks, you know, and they had like different styles and whatever and stuff, you know, and but something that happened was, like, you know, they were talking like, oh yeah, like, you know, and we have this kick that we call Habajahaya, And they're like, can you show us that? And they do Habba Jahaya. And it's like, oh, like, you know, it's the same, you know, what Habba Jahaya means, the tail of the stingray, you know? And the couple is like, whoa, you know, because like, you know, like you're doing an unrelated thing. You don't call a capoeira, you know, but you have the same movement. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Right. It's part of the ecosystem.
Yes. So a vernacular martial art. Yeah. So capoeira sort of arises, is the thing about it, you know? And so there are a lot of masters in capoeira, like a lot of them. And to become a maestre requires a sort of consensus. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like people have to agree that you're a maestre, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's how you are maestre. Or, I mean, Maestre Claudio, you know, who came up before, like, you know, like capoeira, like, you know, was formalized at all. You know, he's like in the old days there was no maestri. He's like, you know, if you wanted to be maestri, either other people started calling you maestri, or you started calling yourself maestri, and then you didn't get your ass kicked.
Because yeah, kind of reputation bomb.
Well, that's it. Like, you know, like capoeira has a very public element. You know, like you play capoeira in the street, you know, and you play in the hada, which is a ring of people. Like, you know, like people watch your game, you know, and they respond, they react, you know, there's an element of theatricality and so on and so forth. And, you know, but anyways.
When they have like the music, right? That's like one of the.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Always there, or?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that. The answer to that is yes. Okay. The music is a fundamental concept. So one thing Mestre Bimba did, for example, was he took away a lot of music.
Oh.
You know, so this is the first guy to codify a style of capoeira formally, you know, before Mestre Bimba, no one is talking about styles in capoeira. You know, so Mestre Bimba, at the time capoeira is illegal, and Mestre Bimba, you know, he opens a school where he claims he is teaching, this is the first capoeira school. And he opens it, and you know, and it's called it's the center for a luta regional de Bahia, or the Bahia, which is to say the regional fight of Bahia, because you didn't call it capoeira because capoeira was illegal. It was highly illegal. That's the way in which multiple variants of capoeira have gone extinct or almost extinct.
Huh.
You know, because the police would like roll up and like fucking like kill you.
Right.
You know, like police in those days carried machetes, you know, the legal punishment for being a capoeirista was having like having your hamstrings cut.
Oh
yeah. You know, and even if you were rich, you know, like there, you know, there's the some fucking like you know like Duke's son ended up being a capoeirista, and when he's convicted he's exiled from Brazil, you know, like it was taken. So anyways, you know, so there are different rhythms in capoeira, you know, so there are different, like you play different, like they're called toques, which is to say different I guess songs on the berimbau, the different rhythmic sequences. A toque is like the basic rhythmic sequence upon which you improvise. But anyways, one of them is called cavaleira, which means the cavalry, and no one plays it anymore, because like it's the song that you would play when the police were coming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's the song that indicates that everyone needs to get the fuck out of here right now.
Yeah, but they legalized it, so nobody plays it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's vestigial now. You know. Anyways, you know. So Bimba. He opens a school, and he, you know, so capoeira has a whole orchestra, you know, once upon a time, guitar was apparently a major element of capoeira. That's been lost, actually, largely.
Huh.
I've heard it once. I have one time heard someone playing capoeira guitar. It was a really beautiful and interesting experience, you know, but the reason guitar died out, actually, apparently, is that nobody wanted to learn it.
That's funny.
You know, it was like, it's like, you know, like, you know, like the berimbau has one string, you know, and it makes three noises, you know, two notes and a buzz. And like, you know, and it's a very deep instrument, but also like, you know, it's not, it's orders of magnitude less deep than the guitar. the guitar is a universe, you know. Mm-hmm. And the Baryon Bell is not a universe in the same way.
A lot with a screwdriver, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Complicated. Okay, go ahead.
So Bimba, he shrinks the orchestra to one Baryon Bell, which is a single one stringed instrument, and then two panderos, which are like tambourines. Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of those.
Yeah, there you go. And there are different ways to play the pandero, you know, like, and so on and so forth. You're playing the tambourine like a drum, basically, mm-hmm. when you're in capoeira, you know, which requires a little, you know, it's not necessarily intuitive. You have to learn how to get drum noises out of that thing. Mm-hmm. But you can do it. So Bimba took a lot of the music away. You know, and he did a bunch of weird stuff to it. He did a bunch of stuff to capoeira. You know, he was very interested in legitimizing capoeira as a fighting style. So he had an open challenge, and he would fight anybody in public. And sort of, it sounds like the founder of your style. He was an enormous man, and he mangled people. Like, he was fucking mangled right. them.
And I should clarify as founder, because it's like Tai Chi was founded like 1,000 or so years ago.
Sure.
And the guy that taught it to people kind of just kept it within their own families.
Yeah.
And that's why the different styles have those different names. It's just the name of the
family. Family martial arts is a thing I'm familiar with. I've talked about this on the Scored, but you know, well, whatever. Like, you know, like, so I don't want to talk too much about, I feel I'm talking too much, but whatever. But because I want to hear about
your stuff. Your podcast.
Sure, I mean, yes, fine. But anyways, so Anthony, so my partner loves the person named Anthony Bourdain.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, and Anthony Bourdain said this thing one time about like, well, he wrote this thing one time about like how like most of the cooking knowledge of the world, mm-hmm. you know, is actually bound up in housewives.
Yeah.
Right. You know. Very true. Like most of like the practical knowledge of how to cook food, you know, is like, you know, in like, you know, like domestic people who are cooking for their families and themselves and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, it's not actually in like these, in, you know, these chefs, you know, and it's the famous ones and so on and so forth. They draw from those traditions and they come out of those traditions, but you know, but most of it, like by weight, you know, is like in like the, you know, like someone's kitchen.
You know, when I was working in a kitchen, there was a certain anxiety I'd feel because a lot of the people I worked with had gone to cooking school.
Sure.
And I had kind of like hung out with my grandma and my mom.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, exactly.
Mirrored yeah. their techniques. And a lot of times I felt like I was a lot more efficient about something. Anyway.
No, you'd be so we're talking about something. So relating that to family martial arts, you know. Mm-hmm. Family, you know, so I've talked about this, but like, you know, like the thing about like cooking and fighting is that they're similar in certain ways because they're two things that like as long as there are human beings that we recognize as human beings, they will do those things.
Yeah.
You know, like they will prepare food, you know, and they will fight each other.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, the one of the other things I can think about that is like sex, you know, like, you know, like they'll have sex, you know, like, you know, they'll develop their own ways of doing it.
Yeah. You every culture in the world, grows yeah. and prepares food, has kids. Like those are universal things.
Yeah. And they fight each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
they have like, to fight each other. Per se, but it tends to happen.
I think it's just part of the again, if there was a culture of if there were people who did not fight at all, like a world without violence, you know, like, you know, I don't know if I'd recognize those people as being human. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like we are now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, but anyways, what's it called? But like, anyways, you know, but yes, so most martial arts knowledge is bound up in family martial arts, which is to say, like, you know, you get into a fight at school and your uncle like takes you to the garage and he's like, here's how you fight.
Yeah.
You know, and you described it as like a vernacular martial art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So that would have a no, but interesting. No, but yeah. Okay. But you said something interesting, you know, again, the impetus for this episode, you said like the style that you were criticizing or that your lineage has traditionally criticized and perhaps defined itself against, you know,
you're like, they
punch like, you know, and they don't like conserve their hip momentum or something. And I'm like, that's interesting. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not as familiar with it. I've just seen videos of people practicing it.
Sure.
But in general, they have fewer tools in their set and the tools that they have aren't as effective.
Mm.
The head of my lineage, while he was practicing something he learned from his family, he also reformed a lot of it to be practical, like to keep right. it competitive with other martial arts.
Yeah. I went on this whole digression. I never got to the end of it, which is, so Capoeira, you know, the root of Capoeira is the hala, which is to say the ring.
Okay.
You know, which is to say, like, you know, like, you know, like, you know, Capoeira, like, you know, like, you know, there's no such thing as a form in Capoeira.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like Capoeira doesn't exist apart from you're in the ring with a guy.
You can't practice it by yourself.
You can. It doesn't so people have tried to do that. You know, it's like a relationship with I believe it's an influence from Asian martial arts. You know, but it doesn't work exactly. I mean, you know, because you can't really like Hashtera, like you can't really have that experience by yourself of really pulling one over on someone.
Yeah, one of the kind of subtle principles that I was taught while doing the Tai Chi form is to never visualize an opponent.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, go on. You were saying.
Yeah, and I was thinking, I've been hearing stuff lately about how fear is a very different thing than the actual perception of danger. Mm-hmm. And that when someone is actually perceiving danger, their body will do what it takes to get them out of that danger.
Correct.
But fear is this, it's just an anticipation of things like that. And it's kind of toxic in a way. And if you're fighting your opponent, you're kind of limiting what you can do, because as long as you're focused on the form and doing it as well as possible, then your body will just know what to do when you're in those situations. Mm. And it's faster than thinking about it and then doing it.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, I'm familiar with the phenomenon you're describing. I have a different way of understanding and approaching it. You know, so something about me is that I'm, in certain ways, I'm not very bright, you know, like I'm not very bright, especially on a level of like conceptualization.
Okay. Well, I mean, I consider you a philosopher of sorts. And,
sure.
And part of that is understanding what you don't understand. Like that's the.
Fair enough.
That mark, I think.
First of all, that's a very kind and generous thing of you to say. You know, I don't know that I would necessarily agree, but I appreciate the spirit in which you say.
Anyone who says they know everything is clearly like unwise. Anyway.
Fair enough. Yeah. No. I've been saying, so it's funny you say unwise. You know, I think about the word wisdom in English. I don't like it very much.
Mm-hmm.
I've been recently I've been thinking a lot about the. What I learned is the serenity prayer, you know, Lord grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. you know, and so on and so forth. I've been thinking about, I think that actually serenity is the wrong word. I think the appropriate prayer is something more like, Lord, please grant me the patience to accept the things which I cannot change, you know, the courage to change those things which I can, and the discernment to know the difference.
If you can't do anything about something, don't worry about it.
Well, you need to be patient.
Yeah.
Be patient. And patient etymologically, you know, has an interesting root. Well, it refers to being a patient, you know, like a doctor's patient in the days before anesthetic. You know, patience is the quality of being a good patient, which is to say, you can like put the strap on your mouth or whatever, you know, and the doctor, you know, can root around in you, you know, and you, does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. That's back on the visualizing opponent thing.
Oh yes, please.
There's a tie-in to, I think, traditional Chinese medicine there, in that there's a, so it talked about internal and external martial arts.
Sure.
Within the framework of Chinese traditional medicine, it's kind of understood that if you practice external martial arts frequently, they will make you naturally more aggressive.
Yeah.
And if you are properly practicing internal martial arts, they will make you serene, I guess is what you said earlier, but less aggressive.
Yeah.
Just kind of a grounded confidence, I guess is the best I can put it. And if I were to visualize an opponent, it would give me a feeling of paranoia, I think, that would translate into an unconscious aggression.
Well, it's funny. It's funny you mention this. I mean, capoeira, and recently, you know, I've been my IRL thing. I was asked to be part of a socialist political campaign for office. We barely lost, but we lost, you know, but I think the campaign was very much a proof of concept in a lot of ways, you know, because barely losing, you know, starting from, you know, we were up against a number of opponents who had prepared to run for that office, for like 10 years easily, you know,
all these very established party connections.
Oh yeah. And one of them had like bought their house, like in that neighborhood, like, you know, like 6 years ago, like with the intention of, you know what I mean? So on and so forth, you know, exactly. You know, and we, like, you know, on a 6 month turnaround, you know, we fucking, the it was a clown car primary. So you could, because it was an open seat and a bunch of people, like, you know, jumped in on the ballot. And there were two really serious opponents, you know, and we fucking creamed one of them, you know, like just demolished them, and the other like barely edged us out, like, you know, at the end, you know, with an enormous, it was 50 votes, you know, like, you know, like, you know, it was a rager mart. It was a heartbreaker, because like we were up, like, you know, when they were doing the count, like we were up for a long time, and then like the last precinct came in and we just didn't do quite good enough, you know, and it was a heartbreaker. But, you know, but
the moments you were like on top, and that must have been a thrill.
Well, I personally have trouble like doing the horse race shit. So I was just like, I was just like, my work is done. Like, guys, call me and tell me if we won, you know, later, you know. And so the rest of the team went through the ups and downs, and I found out later that we lost. what'd you say?
Just barely.
But the point is, like, you know, just barely losing, actually, you know, like, was a proof of concept, you know, like, in a, you know, we it was like statistical noise that we lost almost.
Yeah.
Like political scientists, like, you know, like the weather, like if it had rained that day, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it would have affected the race more than 50 votes, you know? Yeah. And like, you know, so like there's all sorts of things, like, you know, like, you know, we could have done blah, blah, whatever. But like, the reality is, like, you know, the reality is, like, the plan was sound and well executed. It just didn't quite come together, you know, because which is just how it is. You know, politics is you work hard and get lucky, you know. We worked very hard and we got pretty lucky, but not quite lucky enough. also they're but anyways, you know, but we're talking about visualizing an opponent, you know, like, yes. One of my friends was the campaign manager, and they were always like, you know, well, if this guy does this, you know what I mean? Like, we're fucked, you know? And it's like, well, like, you know, he could do that, you know, but also maybe he won't.
Yeah. Thinking about like risks and vulnerability, and like, if you have fewer vulnerabilities, you have fewer risks.
It's complicated, you know.
Specific situation. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I understand. Well, I'm thinking about so Sun Tzu's The Art of War, which you know, I understand, like, you know, has become it developed at some point like a douchebag following.
Sure, it's also so old and influential that it seems obvious.
It is obvious. You know, I think it's best understood as a Taoist text. You know.
Sort of. Yeah.
You know, in certain ways, you know, and Sun Tzu's like, you know, he's like, well, if you strengthen the right flank, you've weakened the left flank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you strengthen the left flank, you weaken the right flank. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you strengthen the vanguard, you weaken the rear. And if you strengthen the rear, you weaken the vanguard. And if you try to strengthen every point, you weaken every point.
Mm-hmm.
Visualization of an opponent. And this goes back to capoeira being, it has to take place in the haba. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, you know, capoeira is a conversation. Capoeira is a conversation. You know, my disagreement with Master Songbird is mostly that I think that Master Songbird, in trying to preserve a certain dialect of capoeira, that people don't really speak anymore. You know, it's like, you know, it's a variant of capoeira so archaic as to, at this point, almost be a dead language.
Yeah, capoeira itself is just, it's very dynamic.
And very, yes,
personalized and very informal.
So yes,
to formalize it, kind of, it's like you are doing something that at one point was considered capoeira, but at this point you're like a museum.
I mean, it's still capoeira, and it's complicated because
was he effective in the Rora?
Yes. Master Songbird, you know, will put you down mid sentence.
Okay.
You know? I mean, he did that.
Something to it. Maybe.
He's a real master. You know, the problem is that he doesn't have any students that rise to his level. That's the problem, you know, is that, like, you know, all, you know, he's so abrasive and difficult personally, despite his incredible capoeira, you know, and you know, that his students, in my experience, you know, the only ones who are able to hang on long term are have sort of a sycophant relationship with him, and so they end up being, you know, lesser versions of Master Songbird. You know, which, and to be clear, to be a lesser version of Master Songbird is to be a fine martial artist.
Mm-hmm. But
you
it's
know,
pigeonholed
in a way. Well, it's a you're now you're in a descending line. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know,
sorry,
you
just wanted to make a pun, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
I'm sorry.
Pigeons aren't songbirds. What the fuck? They don't sing.
They coo.
Okay, coo birds, I guess.
Anyway, birds. Anyway, it was a bad pun, but
oh, it's fine. It was good. It's good. It's like Ramp. It's like Ramsey is here. Ramp, beautiful. Right. I miss right. that guy.
And who among us knows how to pronounce Samog?
Samog.
Samog. That's Samog. I was always thinking it was Samog.
I think it's Samog, and if Samog wants to correct us, they can come on and tell us how it's pronounced.
Yeah, I've never heard Samog's voice.
This is a running meme apparently in the Dominions community that no one has heard Samog speak.
Warbeard pronounced it Samog,
and
that's how Samog spells it on Twitch, on his Twitch account.
Sure, but again, if Samog would like to tell us the pronunciation, he can come on. That's it.
Or copy out the IPA.
No, I didn't say that. That was not enough. I guess as publisher, you could maybe overrule me. I'm not sure of a hierarchy here.
No,
but
it doesn't matter.
Well, you know, but fair enough. But you know, but so style. You know, I'm interested in this idea of like, you know, what makes a style a style? Like, what is a style?
Oh, that's so funny. Just coincidentally, I think it was. Hold on, let me find it. It was Mellum. He said, "Some French dude in the beginning of a book I read in high school. What is a style but a consistent series of mistakes?" Thanks, Mellum.
Okay, go on about that.
Ooh, in letters, writing, you know, there's style guides, whether it's APA, MLA, Chicago style.
Sure.
Each newspaper usually has a certain, like, these words are hyphenated, this word is never used after that word, that sort of thing. It's a series of decisions, but kind of like tying back to the Art of War stuff about strengthening one flank,
weakening
another.
Right.
It's any decision has some
it
somewhere.
I believe the economic term will be opportunity cost.
Yeah, exactly. There's always an opportunity cost. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, which is to say, like, you know, like you know, the cost of doing this thing is that you're not doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I guess goes back to, like, you know, now everyone says, like, you know, like, oh, Turtle, he hates thugs and stuff, you know. But the problem with thugs is their opportunity cost. You know, which is to say, like, you know, you spent like 50 gems, you know, like making this dumb thing.
Your risk is really concentrated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, but you spent this dumb thing, you know, like, you know, whereas, like, you know, you could have spent 50 gems worth, you should have summoned 50 gems worth of elementals. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and 50 gems worth of elementals will fucking trounce, like, you know, it'll get so much more done for you.
Someone was saying about, like, a lot of RPGs will have consumables that are really good and really accessible and you can use really effectively, but they're not as obvious as the overpowered, like, armor and weapons.
Yeah.
That also do those sort of things for you.
Well, I'm not familiar, but it seems like the same concept. No. Yeah. Okay. So style. Yeah. An accumulated series of decisions. And it reminds me of, you saying that, it reminds me of etymology, you know, we talked about the etymology of the word patient, you know, and so on and so forth. I forget who described it, but someone described etymology as fossilized poetry.
Sure. Yeah.
What do we mean when we say that? Well, for example, river. Or concept.
Mm-hmm.
Those are words that have, like, Germanic roots. You know, and river. What's it called? River has the same root as rivet.
As rivet?
Yes.
And they're both, like, depressions.
No, very specifically, like you know, like a river, like, you know, is a thing which cuts the landscape in two.
Oh.
You know, or concept, like, you know, like, comes from, like, the root has to comes from, like, the word hand.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the whatever, like, to grasp a concept.
Hmm.
You know, a concept is a thing you like grasp, that you grasp. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I have a friend on another Discord who speaks Spanish as a first language.
Sure.
And he was like, "Oh, I can't join you all on voice chat. I have a compromise later."
Yeah.
Like, what? And it's like, oh yeah, it's like, you know, it's compromiso. You mean, like, date, appointment?
Yeah. No, you know what? I mean, you know, like, you know, a lot of, like, quote unquote errors, you know, when you're learning a new language, are, you know, you don't understand the logic of your new. Or, you know, like Spanish, like, you know, in Spanish it's tomar decisión. So in English you make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Spanish you take a decision.
Hmm. You're taking a path.
Yeah, you take a decision. you know. This is all, you know, and it's funny, like, you know, so we're talking about language, talking about style, you know. Yeah, that's interesting.
They promised together compromise.
Yeah, no, it's true. No, that's very, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Mm. No, I, you know, yeah. So, you know, I guess this goes back to, like, you know, the relationship of a martial art to a language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is that, like, you know, it's for conversational purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the Tai Chi moves are very, they have very flowery names, mm-hmm. like grasp bird's tail.
Yeah, I mean, Capoeira has something, like especially the old Rio de Janeiro school of Capoeira. Like, from what little I know of it, you know, I mean, you know, Habajahaya, which is the tail of the stingray. You know, mm-hmm. the old term for a Rio de Janeiro technique where you would grab someone by their, like, the lapels of their shirt, mm-hmm. and headbutt them in the face.
Judo stuff, yeah.
The old term for that was to give the forelock, like the front part of your hair, to be smelled. Like, you know, like does my hair smell bad? It's funny.
My instructor demonstrated drunken boxing once, and, like, there's, like, kind of a famous, like, one hand goes where the other was, kind of. It's like, first you take a sip and then you give him a taste with, like, the punch. Mm. You, like, lean back and lean forward with your, like, knuckles and, like, kind of, anyway.
No, that's interesting. No, yeah, style, the idea of a style. Thank you. This has been interesting. I feel like I've learned something.
Good. Me too. I've learned a lot. This has been a really in-depth conversation.
I appreciate it. Yeah, no, I don't know this as well as Run Dry. Maybe we'll come back at some point. If you'd like to, I'd love to hear more.
Sure. Yeah. I feel like we also talked almost entirely about martial arts. And while it might be, like, relevant and parallel to Dominions, we barely talked about Dominions.
Well, I mean, I think it's very similar, actually, you know, like, because right. the whole issue of Dominion's brain is you're visualizing an opponent,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, you know, we didn't get into the digression where, you know, you threw a compliment at me to distract me, you know, but I was trying to say, like, you know, like, I'm not good at visualization, you know, and so, in the ring, you know, you just have to deal with whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, you have to deal with whatever they're doing, you know, like, if someone tries to punch you, you don't stop to critique their form.
Yeah. You don't stick to the plan that doesn't work.
Well, you know, so a lot of the capoeira that I've learned, and this is a whole whatever, like, you know, so now, like, you know, like, Hada Jihua, you know, capoeira Jihua, which is street capoeira, you know what I mean? Like, you know, capoeira that, like, you know, the capoeira Jihua still exists. Mm-hmm. You know, especially in places like Sao Paulo, you know, like, I've been watching a lot of the capoeira content on YouTube right now, you know, it's coming out of Sao Paulo, you know, and, you know, which is, Sao Paulo is the most populous city in the Western Hemisphere, you know, people don't know that, you know, but, like, you know, it's a giant fucking place, you know, and like, you know, and they have this whole community over there of just fucking street capoeira, you know. They very clearly take elements from, like, you know, like I'm watching, and because I played capoeira before, whatever stuff, you know, I'm watching these guys, and they're, like, you know, and they do this style, like, oh, that move is from Cordao Giotto, and that move, you know, like, that's an angulero, you know, so on, you know what I mean, like, you know, capoeira Jihua, you know, so in many ways, like, you know, like, I, because I didn't really, I never really connected with a teacher in capoeira. Mm-hmm. And so I learned by getting my butt kicked a lot. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, and, And, you know, and
I think Anthony Bourdain had something to say about that.
Interesting.
Recently. Yeah, he said, I think getting your ass kicked is like a very good experience that everybody should have, and it improves people or something like that.
Well, you know, like,
I don't know if I agree exactly, but I think I understand where he's coming from.
Sure. No, you talked about being like grounding, and it was in a different whatever, but it really grounds you. Yeah. you know it really grounds you, like, you know, like I had an experience one time, you know, I was up against this was early in my Capoeira career, you know, and I was still fumbling around, and I was up with this guy who I liked a lot, like he was Mexican, he was like from Mexico, and he was a soccer player, you know. Mm-hmm. and he was real consequently like really really good at like sweeping your foot. You know, and there was this big event, and he fucking like just swept the shit out of me, like over and over and over. And I was 19.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, and like one of the and like the guys who've been teaching me at that point, they wouldn't look me in the eye later. Like, you know, like I embarrassed my master. You know what I mean? Like this was before I met Master Songbird. You know, but you know, I always, you know, and they would acknowledge me as their student. You know, because, you know, whatever, you know, I got my bucket over and over and over, you know, but I just kept playing capoeira, you know, I was in the Hada, you know, and eventually, you know, I stopped getting my butt kicked so much.
Yeah, because you like, it really drills into you what doesn't work really quickly.
Yeah, well, you know, you just learn, you know, and something about me is that, like, you know, I've talked about this, you know, I sort of feel bad sometimes because, you know, I have seen and I've had the opportunity to train with and play with sometimes some very, very beautiful styles of what I think of as studio capoeira. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, like, you know, like, you know, like they're a professional capoeirista and they run a studio, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and people come and they pay them money, sometimes lots of money to learn from them, you know, and their capoeira is so beautiful and precise. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, and they have such an incredible degree of control over their body, and their acrobatics, you know, are so wonderful. And I've always felt that my capoeira is very the capoeira that I now possess and that I live, you know, lives in my body. It's very dirty. Like I feel like a thug.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like you know, like there was trouble in the local community here, you know, you know. Just, you know, people thought I was a bully,
mm-hmm.
You know, because something about the, I mean, and that's whatever. So, you don't know anywhere to be. Do you, can I explore this thread?
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
So my first mastery, and I almost just said his name. I'm not going to say his name. You know, but my first mastery, I will say he comes from Rio de Janeiro and, you know, and he practiced a style. There is a current like Rio de Janeiro style. It's unclear how related it is to the old Rio de Janeiro style. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but anyways, but it's complicated, you know.
Moving target, yeah.
What'd you say?
A moving target or something.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, you know, it's unclear. You know, but yeah, and that first style of capoeira I learned is a very frustrating style. because the thing that this guy does is he figures out what the other guy wants to do, right? Mm-hmm. And then does something else.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, you know, like you know, like oh, like this guy like really wants to like do like beautiful acrobatics, you know, and get in like a very intricate game. Okay, I'm gonna be very coarse.
Take him out of his comfort zone, give him more work.
Well, would you know, it's a saying of no thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, you know, like somebody invites you to do this thing and you do something else. Like, no, thank you. You know,
yeah, that's a big thing in martial arts. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, exactly. This is a style that cuts deliberately against the grain of a lot of capoeira.
Okay.
In a lot of ways, it's very impolite.
Mm.
You know, or reads is very impolite. You know,
yeah, there's something recreational about capoeira that a lot of martial arts don't really have.
That's true. Yeah,
because it has like the music and everything.
That's interesting. That's interesting you say that. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Recreational. Yes. Well, especially now in its modern form, it's become like a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. not a survival technique.
Yeah, that's true. In the old days, even the beautiful things were survival techniques because capoeira was like a sort of street performance, you know. Jogo do dinero is a variant of capoeira played for money. Mm-hmm. You know, and in the old days, the traditional whatever is like, you know, like people would be playing capoeira, you know, and then someone would come up and throw money in the haga, you know, like to see the capoeiristas like fight for them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, and so Jogo do Dinero is like a series of not exactly rules, but like customs, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that developed over like, okay, you know, if we're gonna play for money, how do we do it? Mm-hmm. You know, but when Bimba formed the first capoeira like school, formal school and style and stuff, he had a bunch of rules. One of them was like, you have to have a job. If you're going to learn at my school, you have to have a job. You have to be an economically productive person. You know, you have to pay dues, you know, and he forbade any of his students to play the money game. It used to be that, but it was a survival thing. But Bimba was like, you know, like the money game is A, unsanitary, and B, you know, it's basically panhandling.
Yeah, encourages bad.
Sure. Bad. Yeah. You know. Well. So capoeira was like capoeira was illegal, and consequently a lot it had a very straightforward relationship with the criminal underworld.
Okay. Yeah.
And that actually included like a very corrupt, early 19th century, late 18th century, like idea of, or 19th century, 20th, politics, you know, Rio de Janeiro, like for a while, if you've seen like Gangs of New York,
right.
You know that American democracy had this too. It was violent. And it was corrupt, you know, and like people voted a bunch of times and so on and so forth. And like, you know, anyways, capoeiristas, like, you know, were very important in Rio de Janeiro because having the backing of like certain street gangs, like lets you like steal elections.
Yeah.
You know, the whole fucking thing. Anyways, you know, like, and that becomes one of the reasons that eventually there's a push to exterminate capoeira in Rio de Janeiro, you know, and so on and so forth. So capoeira, you know, was unlike other martial arts, which were developed by like communities of warriors, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I think like karate and stuff, maybe, you know, whatever stuff, like, you know, like soldiers and stuff. Capoeira was developed by criminals and not even very organized ones.
Right. It is a street fighter martial art.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing about capoeira. Capoeira is a street fighting martial art. You know, and that makes it weird. Because, you know, like UFC, for example, you know, which is very coarse, for some value, of course, you know, I've made this point before, but it's actually, you know, it's, you know, UFC is about
normal in some ways. Yeah.
Yeah. You go on about that. Yeah.
Just what you're allowed to do.
Yes.
I guess I don't watch a whole lot of it, but I know that there's like certain moves that you're just not allowed to do because they could hurt the other person.
Correct. Yeah. Well, but and you're in a fight.
Yeah.
You know. You know, you can't poke him in the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can't stomp his ankle. You know, you can't headbutt him in the face. You know what I mean? You can't like rabbit punch him in the back of the head.
Like, yeah. Boxing, it has so much formalization that kind of makes sense.
Yes, exactly.
But if it's mixed martial arts, with certain parts taken out because
you know, I mean, and this is my criticism of UFC. My criticism of UFC is that, like, you know, that like a lot of people, a lot of its fans and adherents seem to look at UFC as like, you know, like the, you know, like, you know, proven in the octagon and so on and so forth, you know, as though like, you know, like this is like a natural, like, you know, like no rules. And but it's not, you know, it's deliberately given the aesthetic of being a no holds barred contest. Mm-hmm. But it's very clearly not, because if it was, like, these people would be fucking dying.
Yeah.
These people would be fucking dead. You know, one of the reasons for, like, you know, you talk about the formal aspects of capoeira, you know, or of a martial art, like, you know, the formal aspects of capoeira are there to allow you to practice with each other and play capoeira, you know, without, like, fucking murdering each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but crucial to that, of course, on the other end, is that, like, you know, that, like, you actually be able to murder the guy if you need to. Does that make sense?
Because it is, like you said, a martial art.
Well, and that's the whatever, you know, like, that's the difficulty, I think, you know, which is, like, you know, it sounds like what you're describing, you know, like, you know, you talked about this inferior guy and so on and so forth, you know, it sounds like, you know, like, and you're like his form wasn't even very good, you know what I mean, like, you know, like, you know, you so on and so forth, you know, but his form wasn't good because he didn't have a referent underneath to understand why the form should be in this way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It sounds, you know what I mean?
It's all going. So, we've been doing this for, like, over an hour and a half, I think.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's...
I wanted to stop earlier, but then I got excited.
No, it's fine. Sorry. I just want to say, like, let's wrap this up kind of soon.
We can also do a part two. Let's just do it now. Thank you, Matt Pencils. Thank you so much.
This has been great.
I'm glad. Let's do part two. I don't know when. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. And I guess you'll just send us to Ramp and.
Yeah, I mean, we'll produce it in the normal manner. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Ruby Discourse. You know, disgusting conversation and the idea of style and concepts in space and whatever. All right. And
maybe part two, we'll relate things from part one to Dominions.
Or we'll do whatever the fuck we want. We don't. Who cares?
Absolutely. That's even a better idea. All right.
You know, I mean, this is about Dominions, you know, but you know, in the way that, like, you know, that, like, the you know, I have a friend who's Jewish. They used to be very religious, actually. Mm-hmm. They used to wrap tefillin every day. Mm-hmm. Which is a very specific, like, type of, like, prayer thing. Anyways, and they told me a story once about I wish I could remember it. I'm gonna butcher it, but, like, you know, in the rabbinical whatever's, a fisherman comes up to a rabbi, you know, and is like, you know, like you know, like you know, like he's you know, he's like I'm illiterate and can't read the Torah, you know. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, like, you know, like, I shouldn't be, you know, like, you know, like, you know, I haven't been educated by the Torah. So, like, you know, so how can God expect me to know all these things that I'm supposed to know? Mm-hmm. You know, and the rabbi's answer to him is, like, you know, well, you're a fisherman. And he, like, goes into all these different whatever's of fishing, you know, and he's like, you know, he's like, your work itself is a Torah. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, you complain you haven't been taught of metaphysics, but, like, you know, you do this and this and this, you know, like, you know, all these different things, you know, you've learned these things from your work, like, you know, like, you know, your work itself is a Torah, you know, we're talking about, like, Dominions in so much as, you know, capoeira or Tai Chi is a Torah.
Yeah, there's a line from the Quran. It's like, whatever road you take, there's the face of God.
That's true. I believe that. I believe that very, yes, I absolutely believe that.
Yeah. Anyway, nice. We'll leave you with that.
Yes. That's beautiful. Thank you. Pencils, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for being here.
Great.
We've been trying to do this for a long time, and it was worth the wait.
Yeah, like 8 or 9 months, maybe.
Well, we'll figure it out. I'm not worried. Well,
maybe we'll do this soon. Maybe it'll take some time, but.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Well, this has been the Ruby Discourse, and I am Turtle, and my guest has been
Pencils. Thank you.
By the way, why do they call you Pencils?
I just picked the name a few years ago after I got really into pencil collecting.
All right. Okay. I'll pretend you didn't say that. His name is Pencils for a cool reason. He's not a nerd.
I'm just these aren't mutually exclusive. Anyway.
I'm kidding. That's okay. Well, you know what? Maybe next time you can tell me about pencil collection. I might, you know, if what you told me about Tai Chi is any indication, you know, maybe I would be surprised.
There's some really cool pencils out there. Anyway, I gotta get going.
Until next time. Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right, let's hang out. Bye.